If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. Joe Hoft on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well. We are back, and it's Friday, and thank God it's Friday, and my God, there's so much going on. I've been so busy this morning just tearing into the news and the stories, and we dropped a bomb last night, and it really originated on this show yesterday. Yesterday, we had John Paul Mac Isaac on the show, and he is the computer repairman whose life changed the day that Hunter Biden walked into his store in Delaware. And it was it changed his life forever. He didn't realize it at the time. He kind of actually felt sorry for Joe Biden and Hunter, knowing that his brother had died. It was in the news there. I think his brother was attorney general in Delaware, as a matter of fact, and he died of cancer. And so he showed some consideration to Hunter. Hunter had three laptops that were mangled. Apparently one was just totally destroyed, water damaged beyond belief, no repair. The second one, he gave Hunter a keyboard that he could use to access. Like, the keyboard was ruined through water damage, but for some, he could use it, this external keyboard that would work. The third laptop he needed to hold on to and see if he could download. Hunter didn't want the thing working again. He just wanted the data that was on it. And so John Paul Mac Isaac attempted to get it to work. It wasn't going to work. Too much water damage. All three were water damaged. And so he ended up eventually backing this thing up. But he mentioned yesterday he had to go contact Hunter and have him bring in a drive to download it. And Hunter came in and dropped that off. And that's the last he ever saw Hunter. And so he attempted to, copy from the laptop to the hard drive. And it wasn't working because there was a power issues with the laptop. So what he ended up having to do is piece by piece, copy and paste onto this new hard drive. And from in the process of doing that, he started to see some of the stuff was on that laptop. And it wasn't but a few weeks later that Joe Biden announced he was running for president, the guy who was insane and old and a terrible criminal. And so that changed everything. And he tried to get rid of this laptop, ended up having his dad contact the FBI. They threw him out of their office. They didn't want to hear it. The FBI just didn't want to hear it. They came by one time. He tried to give them the laptop. They wouldn't take it. They went to JP's place. And then eventually they did come and they did grab it. And they said, people that are quiet, usually nothing happens to them, something like that. So they threatened him. And but as time went by, he saw what was on this laptop and he had a copy. And so that's really kind of where the story all began. And what JP mentioned to us yesterday, which was just a bomb, was I asked him about what was his impression about this latest classified document issues and whether it rang a bell at all with him as he's notably seen the laptop. And by the way, I have two. And he said that, there was one thing that really grabbed him. And he said there was this one email that was in the laptop that he says it was there's something unique about it. And the email didn't look like it was coming from Hunter, because Hunter, you can recognize Hunter's writing throughout the laptop. This looked like something that was produced by maybe even a State Department or somebody. And it turns out that it was created from either one or multiple documents, classified documents from the State Department. And Hunter sent this to his business partner, Devin Archer, who was also on the board of Burisma with him. Burisma is the largest oil and gas company in Ukraine. And I wrote some more about it this morning. They're owned by this guy who's a banker, same bank that has somehow lost billions of dollars of IMF and U.S. funds that were transferred to the Ukraine over the years. So that's what's going on in the Ukraine. And then here we are sending another $120 billion over to the Ukraine again, probably going to the same bank. Probably don't know where half this money's at today. Probably $60 billion. We have no idea where it's at. I wouldn't doubt. Out of $120 billion, there's billions that are lost. And then we had this whole FTX thing that kind of, we found out that they were even involved in cryptocurrency and stuff. It's like, oh my God, this stuff's just getting pushed all around the world. God knows where this money's going. So anyways, JP mentioned this document and we started looking at it. And we saw basically what I've shared, that this email was basically based on information that came from either one or multiple State Department briefings coming out of Eurasia. And Eurasia group is the department that oversees the Ukraine. And this was back in 2013, 14. And so then what also the statement that we also made was that based on a review of the laptop, Hunter was receiving classified state information briefings on a regular basis and was using this information to promote the Biden family business. So there you have it. That was a bomb. I think it's one of the biggest bombs in the country this week. So what we're finding out is there's a classified document issue with the Bidens, has been for a very long period of time, going back to the 2000s, 2013, 14, and that it looks like they were just getting almost like live feeds from the State Department that they used then to help the Biden family business. So pretty crazy stuff there. And it just lots going on. So we posted that last night along with the interview yesterday from TNT Radio Live, the Joe Hoff Show. Hopefully you had a chance to listen. If not, go to the Gateway Pundit and look up this article about the Bidens and how they were basically obtaining classified information on an ad hoc basis, real time. So unbelievable. So there's a lot going on, and our good friend Adam Clark, AA Ruckus, is with us again today, and he wants to talk about what happened with the release from Project Veritas and in relation to COVID-19 and related issues. So Adam, how are you doing?
Howdy, Joe. I am doing well. Project Veritas, you're familiar with them. A lot of the listeners are. The hardcore independent journalist group who do the in-your-face undercover videos. They usually involve somebody being taken out to dinner and getting a little bit liquored up. So they start slipping away with the tongue and giving away information that they normally would not want the public to know about. And this time, we're not going to judge anybody, of course, but it was a gentleman on a date with another man. And this gentleman who got caught in this video is supposedly a senior employee at Pfizer. And in this video, you can see him and you hear all about what he is explaining, how the pharmaceutical company is intentionally trying to mutate the virus, COVID-19, just in order to facilitate and, of course, profit from the development of a whole bunch of new vaccines. It's quite stunning. It's gone very viral. I think at last count, it had like 13 million views on Twitter alone in a 24-hour period or something like that. It's garnered enough attention that the fact checkers have to come out and try to, say, mm-hmm. Oh, this is false. But at the end of all the fact checks that I can find, they just say, oh, it's unverified. So, you know, even the fact checkers can't come out and say, oh yeah, nothing to see here. Because again, it's undercover video. You can see the person, you can hear what they're saying. So here's what's going on. The person, the Pfizer executive, his name is Jordan Tristan Walker. According to the documents that were released by Project Veritas, he is Pfizer's Director of Research and Development for Strategic Operations and mRNA Scientific Planning. Wow, that's a mouthful, Joe. mm-hmm. So I would assume that he's a smart dude, highly educated, and that would put him just a few notches below the CEO of Pfizer, Albert Bourla, if this is all true. Mm-hmm. So here's what he was caught on the camera saying to his date. He says, one of the things we're exploring is like, why don't we just mutate it ourselves so we could preemptively develop new vaccines, right? If we're going to do that, though, there's a risk of, like, as you could imagine, no one wants to be having a pharma company mutating effing viruses. Walker claimed that scientists at Pfizer were, quote unquote, optimizing a process to mutate COVID-19, but were going slow because everyone is very cautious. He says, quote, obviously, they don't want to accelerate it too much. I think they are also just trying to do it as an exploratory thing, because you obviously don't want to advertise that you are figuring out future mutations. You have to be very controlled to make sure that this virus that you mutate doesn't create something that just goes everywhere, which I suspect is the way that the virus started in Wuhan, to be honest, he said, adding that COVID-19 was going to be, quote, a cash cow for us while going forward, end quote. All right. So, of course, you can go to Project Veritas and find this video, and I highly encourage that you do. But interestingly enough, Joe, in an update to this story, since that's been done, Veritas released another video, Project Veritas, mm-hmm. that is. I don't want to confuse them. In this one, it shows how when James O'Keefe, Project Veritas's founder, of course, doing his confrontation video where they reveal to him that he was just busted, the guy lost his mind and he started to attack people. I think he tried to attack James. What was interesting to me is out of nowhere, he's starting to spin this bizarre line saying that he made up exactly all of it. He says he made it up. Not only that, that he's not even who or what he says he is. He made up the job title and everything, just trying to impress his date. What? Mm-hmm. That I'm like, dude, the guy was pretty drunk, and you just heard me read what he was saying. I don't think that that's something somebody could just make up, unless it was like a skill. It's on the tip of your. There's no way this guy is faking this. This is ridiculous. This is crazy. So some people took to Twitter, of course, to mock the fact that he's trying to say that he was just trying to impress his date. Someone said, I know when I'm going to impress a date, I drop stories about doing gain of function research on live monkeys, stuff like that. So, yeah, what do you think? Yeah.
Well, I know James O'Keefe. My brother knows him real well. He's been around a long time, and he was a young buck. And he just started doing this technique where he would videotape people undercover and get them, saying unbelievable things. He's hit CNN and others across, numerous times. He's really effective, and so the left hates him and they've attacked him, and he's been recently. Challenged by the FBI. They've subpoenaed him and took all his contact information from him through the subpoena. So they just evil things that they're trying to do to stop him. But yeah, I saw a piece of the response from this guy to O'Keefe as O'Keefe walks up and shows him and apparently grabbed the laptop and destroyed it. Maybe it was an iPad that O'Keefe was showing him. Hey, did you say this? And that's when he freaked. And then I think the police were ultimately called to rein him in because he was getting violent. So, I guess people aren't happy when this kind of stuff happens to him. But apparently it's legal because he knows the laws in the states when he does this. And he's gotten some people to, undercover just saying unbelievable things that we all probably thought about. But then he gets somebody saying he had Twitter. He got big tech before too, Facebook. The thing about this particular instance is that this kind of coincides with what we've heard about COVID-19, that one of these big pharmaceuticals already had the patent on the vaccine before COVID-19 even hit. So it's not too far-fetched to think that this is happening again. And there's just tons of money involved in this. And there's some real greedy and sick people. Although I got to tell you, there's a piece the other day at the Gateway Pundit. And we've put both these videos up at the Gateway Pundit. If you do a query on O'Keefe, I'm sure you'd see it, or Project Veritas. One person said the other day, these vaccines are toxic, that maybe the effort wasn't just to release a bad, virus, but it was to put this vaccine into people's systems that basically might be, time bombs ticking. And that's going to maybe even ultimately kill people, which we're seeing people drop by the day. So you will see, I guess. Yes, all sorts of thoughts with this. It's a great topic, Adam.
Yeah, and I'm always concerned. I'm a bit conspiratorial sometimes, so forgive my tinfoil hat, Joe. But, you know, I can't trust everything because I know how some people who are known to be trusted in the community, the elites, the enemies, the liberals in this case, they know that. So they might be able to implant evidence. Maybe they planted this guy to try to throw everybody off the track of what's really going on. So that's always something to consider too. But no matter what, I've been watching a lot of Project Veritas. I love it. Absolutely love it. Support everything that they do there. But this is the first time I think I've ever seen where the person denies. I've never seen anyone say, oh, I was lying to impress the date. That was this is really interesting stuff. So I think we all want to keep our eye on this one for sure.
Yeah. How about it? Well, hey, thanks so much. And thanks for coming on look forward to chatting with you next week as well, Adam. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too, Joe.
Okay, we'll be right back. This is Joe Hoff Show.
You should hear what Timothy Shea is talking about.
The left are of Satan. Literally, all they do is they tear down, destroy. Look at anything they've quote-unquote built. It's never been built back better. It's always been worse. And one of my theses is that this whole COVID scamdemic is designed to divide us. Public support for doctors has plunged by double digits between the transgender mutilation surgeries, between the COVID jabs. Is that by design?
Absolutely, this is by design. There's actually that old adage, divide and conquer, right? If you want to conquer the masses, you have to divide them. Well, the basic structures of our entire American foundation has been, number one, the family, and then probably church, and then organizations beyond that. And they have done a phenomenal job at creating division in all of those categories.
Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
The FBI said Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation, interfering in the 2020 election to a far greater extent than anything Russia or China ever could have hoped to accomplish. This corruption must be investigated and exposed. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, we're back. This is Joe Hoft. And quite a segment there. Previously, lots going on in the world today. And I have my good friend, David Clements, attorney David Clements, with us today. And he's got some breaking news, I guess, out of Colorado. David, how you doing?
Oh, hey, Joe, I'm doing well. I just pulled over to the side of the road. We have breaking news, but it's not breaking news out of Colorado because Tina Peters' trial was postponed. And I'm still heading there to do a rally in support of her, but they basically have continued the trial till early March, late February. I don't have a report there for you, Joe. I was hoping to have one for you, but things have changed.
Okay. Well, I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you know the reason why they moved it?
Someone apparently came down with COVID, and and I don't know if that's, you know, legitimate or not. You never know. It may be good if we can get more people in the jurisdiction of the county to be vocal and be educated on just how right Tina Peters was on her decision making, her process. There really needs to be a public outcry where the people rise up and confront the judiciary and talk to the newspapers, talk to anyone that will listen. Because she's actually facing two trials. There's a civil trial that's going after her monetarily, and then there's a criminal trial with indictments to throw her in prison. And so there's a full front assault on Tina Peters for being, you know, the most heroic clerk in the country.
And she's the really the topic of the movie Selection Code, which you know, you shared with me before. I tell you what, I cried when I saw that piece where she's she goes into her drive or into her garage after the FBI had raided her house during the day. It just sounds like threw everything all over the place. And she, in the garage, she had a box of her son's things, and her son was a warrior, and he had died over, I guess, in Iraq. Iraq or Afghanistan. I believe it was Iraq. And she had all of these belongings of his that she just never opened after his death. She just didn't want to – just couldn't do it, I guess. It was just too emotional. And so in the movie, they show her that day the FBI had, you know, opened this box and thrown it around in the garage with everything else. And she grabbed it and she brought it inside. She sat down at her table and she opened the box. And she talks about this where her son wrote her a letter, or he had to describe his mom in one word or something, or two words, and he called her the fixer, that she always fixed things. And I got to tell you, I get choked up even talking about that. That scene was so powerful. But she was trying to say, we sometimes need to, you know, open the box. We got to look at this stuff. And it was very it was moving, but it was very, you know, symbolic of what the whole movie was about, is we got to look at these voting machines. We got to look at our elections. What's going on? And of all states, Colorado, it's a mess. So that's what I know about Tina. She seems like a beautiful lady. And I sure hope that she, you know, I'm convinced that she wouldn't do anything that was wrong, knowing it was wrong. I just pray to God that there's not some sort of catch that they're going to try to get her on. Because she's just an American doing her job. You see her in that. She's a sweet lady. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think what happened with Tina is she actually did her duty. She was required to preserve election records under the law. And there was a race. If you'll recall, back during the cyber symposium, there was a race to preserve the election records because we had evidence that Dominion was going in and wiping election files under this thing called the trusted build, or under preventative maintenance. So under the auspices of changing out batteries, they were violating federal and state law. But when you've got the Secretary of State of Colorado and people in on the scheme to commit real crimes, basically Tina Peters did the right thing to preserve things. And in her efforts to preserve things, they were saying she was running afoul of all of their policies and regulations. And so it's very reminiscent of like Edward Snowden, who, sure, he had a security clearance agreement and he wasn't supposed to do anything, but he also had a duty under the Fourth Amendment to abide by the Constitution. And so he chose the higher law and he obeyed the higher law and he broke the lesser law, but it was for, you know, it was for a legitimate end. And so I think what we're seeing across the country is you've got all kinds of people trying to get to the truth, but you've got election codes that are written effectively by Dominion and ES&S, and they're making it illegal to have transparency. So when you go on there and saying, look, I've got a higher calling to make sure that the American people know as a whistleblower, there's got to be protection afforded. So Tina Peters, in my mind, is the epitome of what a whistleblower is. She's in a gamed and rigged system, and we're all the beneficiaries of her knowledge. And it wasn't just Tina Peters. You know, I met with a clerk that ran elections in Utah last night. His first name's Bruce. Last name escapes me. But he was the guy that was instrumental to standing up against Diebold in 2006, and they ruined his life. He was a Tina Peters before Tina Peters. And they found all kinds of backdoor access, all kinds of access points from foreign countries back then. And if you recall, in Utah, the governor at the time was John Huntsman. And anyone that knows anything about John Huntsman knows about his ties to communist China. So this is something that's been around for so long. I think one thing that Tina Peters has in her favor that this gentleman didn't back in 2006 is that the American people, I think, are finally... they've finally waked up, over just how big tech, big media, big government has been working against them.
That's amazing. I didn't know that about Huntsman being connected to China. I saw he wasn't on Trump made him, he was the governor, and then Trump made him, I believe, an ambassador to Russia of all places. And then he has this daughter who has been on The View. Used to be on Fox, and she jumped over to The View, and we found out, oh my God, she's actually a lefty. And her dad was a real lefty. He ran as a Republican, but he was his policies were crazy left. And the other thing was that he came from a real wealthy family. His dad was like a billionaire. But I hadn't heard that connection with that's interesting. I hadn't heard that connection with China, with Huntsman. I didn't know that.
Well, he left his position in Utah as governor, and the lieutenant governor succeeded. And if people don't know, basically, Utah has a very, very difficult and cumbersome process to actually get a governor elected. The lieutenant governor is the secretary of state. It's the only state that I know where the lieutenant governor runs the elections. And so you've got all kinds of conflicts of interest where you're on the ballot. And you can basically set yourself up to be sitting really pretty come election season if you're the lieutenant governor, if you're an appointment. So if the governor leaves, lieutenant governor has unfettered power. And so there's been a series of transitions in Utah where the people have actually been deprived of voting for the governor. There's been appointments, and then the lieutenant governor's been gaming the system. And that especially happened in 2020.
Wow. Wow. So what do you know about Tina Peters' case? What do you think, what more details can you tell us about what happened, what she did, what she's been indicted for? And then maybe in both this, I guess in both cases, a civil and criminal. And what are your thoughts on how the case will go once it's finally heard, or the case is?
Well, Joe, I guess I'll give you the crayon version for your listeners.
Yeah.
Basically, what you're looking at is unauthorized access. An election official, as Tina Peters, was basically, we're being told that she had unauthorized access in how she secured the Mesa County forensic images, which is what Jeff O'Donnell's work was based on. And they're saying that was criminal. And so there was an indictment that followed after her office was raided. In fact, her office was raided when she showed up to the cyber symposium to blow that whistle on a large scale. Most of the charges from a criminal standpoint are related to that. I'm not as familiar with the civil case, it's probably related to something akin to defamation, where they're claiming that she said false statements about the computer systems, Dominion in particular, and that her false statements have damaged, you know, the reputation. So I'm just, from a broad stroke standpoint, Dominion's been filing lawsuits against many people, whether it's Tina Peters, Joe Altman, Mike Lindell, Sidney Powell, and most of those cases have fallen on the cause of action known as defamation.
I can only, wish her the best. Like I said, I don't know if I haven't met her, but I've met a girl that was working with her.
Sharona Bishop?
Sharona, yeah, that unique name, Sharona, from the famous song from years ago. Yeah, I met her.
Sharona Bishop.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, she had her house raided as well. I mean, she's another person who had, you know, the corrupt Department of Justice, FBI, all kinds of people, basically hold her at gunpoint in front of her children. And so these people have been treated in disgusting fashion. Sharon is another warrior, someone who's committed to the truth. And she was also, I think, very instrumental in helping Lori Boebert become a very, very strong conservative voice in Congress.
Well, I didn't realize that. So she's in politics. I knew that. She's like ran some campaigns. Did she run Boebert's campaign?
I don't know if she ran it, but she was a very, very large voice in that. So she was part of the team. I don't know exactly what she did, but she's terrific.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, I met her at that second symposium of Lindell's that took place in Springfield, Missouri, last summer. So that was some. I guess we saw you there too. So what else is there? Any other hot topics you'd really like to talk about today? I know there's this case going on in Arizona.
Sure.
I think it's coming out next week. Anything you want to share on that? Or
we got great news.
Yeah.
What I'd like to encourage people with is, even though we've got a continuance in Tina Peters' trial and couldn't give any updates, is that you actually put out a recent article based on some of the developments in California, and I really appreciate you doing that. But in Shasta County, the first county in California voted to defund Dominion, which was amazing. And I was in front of Kern County, which is home to Bakersfield and the home of House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy. And we've got the Board of Supervisors there on the agenda, that same issue of defunding Dominion. And so on February 28th, there'll be another opportunity to have another county do that. And why this is significant is that boards of supervisors in California, the election code really strips them of doing much, but they have the purchasing power to either fund a contract or not fund it. And if the people of California continue to show up and educate these boards of supervisors that these machines in fact facilitate fraud, it's incumbent upon them to not fund them. And so we're seeing that movement that happened. And then the other update, Joe, is that we've talked about this in the past, that the city of Milton, Georgia, agreed to vote out Dominion and basically go to a hand-counting procedure and cut costs, basically run their elections at a quarter of the cost that they were with Dominion. There is another city in Georgia. They haven't formally announced that they're going to get rid of Dominion, but they are certainly going to administer their own elections. And I've been told in confidence that there's two more that will follow. So I can't give you the names yet, Joe, but I'm breaking it with you right now that I'm expecting three more cities to announce that they will not be using Dominion services. And as soon as I'm given permission to break break that information to you, I will.
Yeah, great. And I saw your presentation in front of that one county in California this past week. Well done, by the way. Tough situation though. The Board of Supervisors appeared as if they didn't really want to hear it. They didn't want to deal with it. And they're really just trying to push you off, especially the guy who was, the chairman. He seemed pretty reluctant to give you much time to share anything, or anybody else for that matter. And it is a win that they're going to bring it up. What's your hopes? I mean, this guy was, what do you think of the board there? Do you think they have it in them to vote? I don't know. What do you think?
No, well, I mean, I think you what you saw was where they're at right now, but we don't care. We're going to force the issue. Here's what people don't realize that have watched that video, which is titled "The Lions Are Awake." It's a great, fantastic video, 12 minutes of basically patriots standing up and saying, we're just not going to take it anymore, and demanding that Kern County defunds Dominion. The issue was on their agenda, but they discreetly removed it. So here's the deal. I was tasked to fly out to Kern County to present, secretly meet with that very council. We invited every single one of them to a public presentation that was 3 hours long. None of the supervisors attended that public presentation the night before. One of the supervisors met with me in person, and I spoke with him 2 hours. So every one of them knew that I was there. There was an opportunity, and there was an opportunity to hear from me for more than 2 minutes, but they pulled the item out of fear. And in fact, instead of voting to defund, the election clerk in Kern County asked for a continuance. So she was very, very scared that I was there. And so they tried to strip me at the last minute of providing what I needed to provide them. And so what you saw was the controversy of how ridiculous it is that you have a subject matter expert there. They've been invited. They're hiding. They're ducking. And we're not going to let them do that. So I was there to report a crime. I don't think there's a time limitation in reporting a crime. In fact, if they wanted to call the sheriffs to remove me from there, they need to hear about Dominion just like anyone else. And that's really what that video explored. But people need to know that I was supposed to speak for more than 2 minutes. And at the last minute, they just they closed that door.
Hmm. Yeah, unbelievable. You know, David, I've been given this, you know, we all have, we think about this stuff all the time, but especially with Dominion and stuff, I think the key points there are what the CISA came out and said about the Dominion voting machines in Georgia, when they won't release that Haldeman report, but they came out with this other report that was really damning that said, hey, it looks like a bad actor could get in there and make changes to the results if given the opportunity. And again, we haven't seen the Haldeman report, which is just horrible that we haven't. But to me, like, the security around the system is really very suspect. Why do we have – and then, you know, why do we have a system in place with such huge security issues? The second thing from my perspective is in the corporate world, this would never happen. I mean, and you've heard me say this 100 times maybe, but you as an auditor, when you go in to validate somebody's financials or year-end numbers or whatever it might be, you have to look at that system, because systems are so important today as part of our processes. They're just absolutely, you know, you have to look at them. It's imperative. And if you want to have confidence that the system's working right, you have to have some good, strong IT auditors look at them and test them and validate that these machines are working as intended. We don't have that. We don't have that with Dominion. Nobody's letting us look at them. And we don't have auditors looking at these machines across the country and validating that they're working as intended there. And we don't even know what as intended means, actually, because there isn't any well-defined documentation that suggests what that even means. And the other piece is, as you've pointed out, these people that work in these various, you know, precincts or counties, they don't have the skill sets to look at these machines. That's way out of their purview. So it's just the whole process of having machines, they shouldn't be there. We shouldn't have them because we cannot adequately, you know, audit them and you know, for compliance with just reasonable, I guess, security and application issues. It's just that, you know, they shouldn't even be there.
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of thoughts on what you said. I think, one, it was amazing that Chris Krebs came out, what, a few days after November 3rd, 2020, talking about how it was the most safe and most secure election. And then the same agencies that he relied on to give that statement, as you just mentioned, just 2 years later, put out the CISA report acknowledging that there were massive vulnerabilities. And it was based in part on Alex Halderman's work. Now, Halderman's deposition has been redacted. We haven't seen his full report. What we've seen is the Halderman Declaration. And that declaration says, yes, if you have the opportunity to breach these systems, you can basically interfere with the election files, and you can basically make these machines do anything you want. But he places robust confidence, I guess, in Dominion that somehow they themselves would not be part of the security threat. And so his premise is that Dominion's good. It's going to be difficult for someone like me or you to have access and therefore do nefarious things. Our premise, based on the work of Jeff Lamberg, is though if you've got bad actors within the corporate structure of Dominion, you're acknowledging that they can basically fix your elections from anywhere in the world. So that's one point that I bring up is, you know, that's not a great admission. It's not something that serves the American people or confidence. So, you know, we have to get back to a pathway where you have a truly auditable path. And this is my second point, Joe, is that as a corporate auditor, you know, that you have to be able to audit the source code. And because that's really the one thing that will put the issue to rest on whether the machines do what we say or they do what Dominion says. And how they can escape an audit on something that is so crucial to the administration of our voices and our votes is beyond me. But we're going to keep pushing and beating that war drum until we get the source code.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's it. Thanks, David. That's a, you know, well put. And that's a big deal. We'll have to talk some more about this whole topic, because I think there must be some sort of legal avenues that we can take across the country to address these major gaps in these systems, and to get in place, you know, systems and processes that we're confident in. Because right now I have zero confidence in the systems, the processes, the people. It's everything's broke. And we need to fix that. And I appreciate all you're doing, David, traveling the country to just ensure, you know, voter integrity. It's very, very admirable. Thank you very much for all you do.
Well, thanks for having me, Joe, and right back at you. We're so thankful for your voice and getting to the truth, brother. So God bless. Take care.
Well, thank you, man. Have a great, safe trip, and we'll catch up again soon. Thanks so much for dialing in. Really appreciate it. We'll be right back. This is the Joe Hoff Show, signing off with David Clements, and we'll be back after this short break.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Former President Donald Trump has already announced he's running for re-election in 2024. And a November poll done by Emerson College showed that Joe Biden would have beaten Trump back then 45-41%. But Emerson has done another poll, and the results have changed. This poll was done since we all found out about Biden's document problem. Results released on Tuesday show Trump with a 3-point lead, 44-41%. That's a 7-point swing from last November's poll. And there's more from Emerson, this regarding the chances of Ron DeSantis. I find it hard to believe, but Trump holds a 26-point lead over DeSantis in a hypothetical Republican primary that is actually a 4-point drop from the November poll. Look, these numbers don't mean much at this point, but after all, the election is less than 22 months away. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Every time you hop on your motorbike, who else is coming with you? Well, there's your girlfriend.
Hey, babe.
Your mum.
Hi, love.
Your dad.
Hey, shuffle closer, will you?
Your mates.
Hey, buddy.
How you going?
Not to mention your dreams, your plans, and your future. So next time you're on your motorbike, ride safely. Because there's a lot riding on it. A message brought to you by the Government of South Australia.
You're listening to Joe Hoff on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, this is Joe Hoff. We are back at the Joe Hoff Show here on a brisk Friday afternoon here down in Florida. It's a bit windy and chilly, but it'll be up in the 80s again next week. So looking forward to that. But bit of a chilly day. I think up in the Midwest, they're facing some real chilly temperatures as well. And that's that time of year. So that's what happens. Just like in the summer, it gets hot. And that's not due to climate change. It's just due to the way this world works. So anyways, appreciate you listening in. A lot of great observations from David Clements. Maybe there's a Freudian slip there. David's just an incredible guy traveling the world, the country, and talking about voter integrity. And I met him in Georgia, went up and saw him last summer as he did a couple of seminars up there a couple of days in a row. One was in front of a board of supervisors of a county up there, and one was a presentation on the election and stuff. Very, very good. So he's doing an admirable job. Just a real warrior for the truth. Some breaking news that came out this morning, you can see it at the Gateway Pundit, is that the police body cam was released of Paul Pelosi's attack. He was apparently in his underwear holding the hammer, or holding the drink, actually, when the cops came to the house. And so, as you recall, Paul Pelosi... My God, they do have a video that showed busting a window with a hammer before entering home released. Oh, my God. So they do have a also, they've released a surveillance video of Pelosi attacker David DePape busting a window with a hammer before entering the home. Well, that's something. I haven't. That was the piece that I thought, well, I don't believe it. I don't believe the guy came in through the back door because there was information that the window had broken going out. And now they've got a video showing glass, I guess, showing DePapi breaking into the home. Now, I'm shocked that this guy got around to the back of the house and was able to do that. So we'll have to see. Police body cam was released earlier today. Now they're saying they've got DePapi breaking in the back door. They have a 911 call that was released, and then they've just updated the surveillance video from Pelosi's home. So my God, we'll see more on that. So the big news coming out, I haven't even had time to look at this stuff, as you can tell. It's like, oh my God. So we'll see. We'll see what happened there. DePapi showed up at the house, and we don't know exactly why. It sounded like he knew Paul Pelosi. Paul Pelosi's holding the drink when the cops came to the front door. And the thing that people were saying is if this guy felt danger, wouldn't you run? Wouldn't you, instead of walking back into the house, or he and this DePapi were holding the hammer together, wouldn't you run? Wouldn't you say, help me, save me, get me away from this guy, protect me, something like that? So kind of still some strange stuff going on. So amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. Also today, so go look at the videos and look yourself. What I did hear is that one of the videos, I guess it was the body cam clip, was edited. They only gave 99 seconds of a much larger clip. So it'd be interesting to see what was all in that entire clip. So we will see. And we'll have to look at that. Other news today, the RNC is meeting in Arizona, apparently, to vote on their next chairman of the RNC. Ronna Romney McDaniel, Mitt Romney's niece, is running again for the chair position. She's lost every election since she's come on board. They lost the 2018. They had the President Trump's election stolen from him in 2020. She sat back and allowed that to happen. Took in $80 million, though, for people that were after the election that wanted to help some way. Took that money, but didn't do anything. And then in 2022, she watched this incredible red wave that was to happen get stomped as well, I believe, by the election fraud. So, we will see if she ends up winning the RNC chair position again. I don't know if anybody's going to beat her. And I've talked to somebody who worked with her when she was in Michigan. She took a lot of the credit for Trump winning Michigan in 2016. And there was a group of ladies there that have a problem with that. They felt like they were the ones that saved the day. They got together and got a group of women to show up in Detroit that morning. They knew nobody was there. And so they showed up and they saved the day and prevented major voter fraud in Detroit the morning of the election, after the election, and saved Michigan for President Trump. That didn't happen in 2020. It was a mess there. And these people tried to sign up. They couldn't. We've had Patty McMurray on the show. She said they couldn't even get in access to the place because they wouldn't hire you if they found out you were a Republican. So all these workers in there were Democrats. So you got to ask, what's going on in Detroit? And then they manufacture votes, and all of a sudden the Democrats win. All the Democrats win. Even Benson and the horrible governor. Horrible stuff happening in Michigan. Horrible. And so that's the kind of stuff we've got to stomp out. We got to go for free and fair elections. That's all we're asking for. That's all we want. But it doesn't involve machines, and it doesn't involve all Democrats counting, and it doesn't involve massive absentee ballots coming from God knows where. We should be checking into all of this and finding ways that'll work, you know, with real free and fair elections. So I'm looking at this piece at the Gateway Pundit. It's Jordan Conrad's son, who was on our show earlier this week. He confronts Romney McDaniel and asked her, what about the $80,000 that she spent for alcohol that she spent in her role as the chairman of the RNC? Looks like they have great parties, but they don't stand for their candidates very much, that's for sure. So lots going on. I'm pretty much taken back by this information that's coming out of San Francisco. I did hear that, yeah, only 90 seconds of that one body cam was released, and there's a lot more. Be interesting to find out what else was on there and what else was said. Apparently, we're not going to get that right now. And we'll see what happens. Today, we've also had I got a post from Lawrence Sellin, who we've had on the show before. Lawrence wrote an article about Biden's Defense Department now giving money to to research and universities that are linked to the Chinese and Russian warfare programs. And so we're going to give them more money again, just like we did in the past. Eco Alliance is one of the firms, and I think they've made millions from government funding. And then they're involved with the Wuhan lab in China, which many people believe that's where COVID started. So we're giving them money again. That doesn't make sense. So, so much going on today that's just really bizarre. Probably the biggest piece, though, is what I shared this morning. It came from yesterday's show. Really, the trigger was ignited in yesterday's show, where we uncovered, per our discussion with John Paul Mac Isaac, that the Bidens were basically, and this is how we phrased it, they're basically were taking State Department information on a real-time basis, grabbing it, and then using it in their advantage around the globe as they set up entities and made money for the Biden family. And so big document that came out yesterday or earlier this week is this page of 22 items that Hunter wrote to his buddy Devin Archer. Devin Archer worked for John Kerry in his campaign for president back in 2004. Young guy then, still a relatively young guy. He's in prison now because he defrauded an Indian reservation. Initially, his judge found him not guilty, but the two other people with him guilty. And then that was appealed and he was thrown in jail. The judge, we found out, her husband worked for the Mueller gang. So there you have it. You know, so she let Devin Archer off. And fortunately, it went on appeal and the judge above her was more fair-minded. And he definitely thought that he committed crimes. And so Devin Archer was thrown in jail. This is the guy. This guy defrauds an Indian reservation out of millions and or at least a million. And he's the same guy that's working with Hunter Biden and business partner of Hunter Biden and worked for John Kerry. And of course, Hunter's tied to Joe Biden and Barack Obama. And these are the two guys that got put on the board of directors at Burisma. And Burisma is the largest oil and gas company in Ukraine. And so these two young guys are there. They had no business being there. They had no expertise in the field at all. The only thing that they had is Joe Biden's dad was vice president of the U.S. And the guy who was running Burisma, basically the real owner, was this guy who owns this bank, private bank, and in Ukraine. He's one of the three or four billionaires in Ukraine. And he also was involved in somehow losing, not able to find, misappropriating, however you want to say it, billions of dollars from U.S. funds and from IMF funds that they just never could figure out where the money went. And it was his bank, and he was involved, and somewhere this money's at, billions of dollars. Now, that's who Hunter and Devin Archer were working for at Burisma. So if you think that there wasn't any funny stuff going on there, you'd be really naive. And then we find out, and Hunter was making, him and Devin, I think they were making $80,000 a month. So crazy stuff going on. Anyways, hey, thanks for listening and thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week with some great shows as well. Hang in there. Have a good weekend.